We all know the feeling of dragging yourself through that penultimate shift before the big end of year celebration, the drudgery and dourness of the dog days that we sometimes simply have to get through to enjoy the good times ahead. But enough about the Tyler Sems podcast 300th episode. Let's talk about Reading's 1-0 home defeat to West Brom for episode 299 of the show by Reading fans for Reading fans. I'm Mark Mayer and delighted to be joined tonight by Dave Handbags Harris. It's been too long, mate, since you've been on the podcast. Glad to have you back on.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a while. Just diaries just haven't been able to match up, have they? But yeah, it's about time I got myself back in the podcasting game. So yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah, we have got some ideas for an interesting show. This isn't, I don't plan on it being 45 minutes of talking about a 1-0 defeat to West Brom, but we'll get into that in a second in the recap. We'll have the mailbag coming up later with your questions, a bit of news bites to catch you up on what's been going on around the club, and we've got the final game of the season to look ahead to. So before we do that, as always, a big thank you to our subscribers on the Patreon and to our sponsors, ZCZ Films. So let's talk about then the recap of Reading 0, West Brom 1.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, Handbags, this was a game that happened. Reading played badly. We lost. It's telling to me that if you watch the two-minute highlights that the club put up of the game, it featured exactly zero instances of Reading having any kind of threat or anything, which I think is just about as good a summary as I can make for this game. I suppose the question I have is kind of, are we surprised that Reading didn't really turn up to this game? Obviously, it's a bit of a cliche saying we were on the beach and all that sort of stuff. Are we surprised that was going to happen? I guess I'm a little bit surprised because we had mustered a bit of energy and stuff in the last couple of weeks, and keeping that up, probably, I get you listen to Paul Ince, and I guess it's not too much of a surprise that we let it go because he talks about the objective being completed and all that sort of stuff. But I guess I was a bit surprised and disappointed that this game just did kind of pass us by.
No, not surprised at all. It's totally in keeping with how life has been at Reading Football Club for the last 4 or 5 years, isn't it? Even last season when we had a good season, finishing seventh, the way that we just capitulated in the last 10 or so games was no surprise. So, yeah, I turned up just wanting to get through the 90 minutes and get to the end of my season because I'm not going to Luton. I can't go to Luton anyway. For me, there was no surprise whatsoever. And the pattern was set really within literally the first 5 to 10 seconds with our kickoff back to, I think it was Drinkwater, who passed it then out to Baba Rahman. And West Brom just sat. They sat in their shape. They didn't press. And I immediately thought, this is going to be one hell of a slugfest. It's going to be boring. There's nothing going on here. And, I was blowing trumpets or anything. I was proven right with my thoughts. And, yeah, it was a boring game. Nothing really in it. No surprise that it was decided by a mistake. And I'm just glad to get it out of the way.
Yeah, that leads me to the question that comes out of this game because, I mean, we've spoken about Paul Ince and all sorts on the podcast. And this game doesn't really change my thoughts on that. But when it comes to the players, it's a thought that we kind of have that players are there playing for their future, they're fighting for their contracts. There's, you know, this is the time of year when scouts, I'd imagine, are kind of at most fever pitch for getting their last reports ready for what players do we want to sign. And we've got a lot of players that need to find a club and, you know, fight for their future for the next few games. And obviously they just didn't make use of this as an opportunity. And it just leaves me, I feel like a good question for this game is, you know, all the players that are out of contract and obviously loan and everything, we all have our couple of two or threes that we want to pick up. And I suppose the question I want to ask is, if you had a choice between keeping all of them on like a 3-year contract or so and signing all of them up, so that would be obviously like Swift, Winnemotta, Yeardon, but then also keeping like Drinkwater, Rahman, and you know, just the whole lot, or bin all of them, so you get none of them again, which would you pick out of that? Because I'm kind of leaning, particularly in the last couple of weeks, we've seen how the lack of fight and everything has returned. And, you know, whether some people say that's fair enough or whatever, but I'm just kind of at the mode now to just kind of burn it down, start again. New manager, probably won't be anyone new at the top of the club, but just going to have to live with that, I think. And just kind of let it all go. Bank whatever wages will save and then start again is kind of the mode. I don't know, out of those two choices, which one you'd kind of favour?
I'm completely with you. I think the football club needs a complete reset. It was reassuring to hear Paul Ince speaking about talking to the owner and talking about the structure that needs to be put in place and should be put in place if he was to be made manager. So he's obviously of the opinion, the right opinion, that I think many fans would agree with, that something needs to be done with regards to the structure within the club. We've known for a long time that the majority of this squad is out of contract. There's no way we can afford most of the players. You know, if there was one player that you'd want to retain, it would be John Swift. I don't think really that I'd really want anybody else. Or perhaps Andy Yeardom. But the assumption that he's out of contract, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, he is.
So, but ultimately, no, the club needs to be completely reset. And too many of the players have been at the club for, you know, a lot of the recent absolute dirge that's been served up. So, you know, provided I think next season many people are expecting it to be a year of struggle. Provided I think we're competitive, we do ourselves proud, and at least look like we're capable of surviving, I think many people will accept that. Given the restrictions that we've been placed under by the EFL, but I think the majority of the players next season, you know, we know they're not going to be here. The club needs a reset, and you know, time to wave goodbye to them, I think.
Yeah, and no, I probably agree with that. Just a quick thought as well before, because we'll go into the mailbag in a second, but Paul Ince, obviously, you know, he's had a good view of what's wrong with the club, and he won't be afraid of sharing his opinions and that sort of stuff. He won't suffer fools gladly, which is definitely a pro for him as we talk about who he wants to get the job. Is there, do you think, any kind of potential or sort of credence for him to be almost a director of football type, or like a consultant or something, where, you know, Dayong has said, you're a good bloke to have around, but I don't particularly want you picking the team and the tactics every week. Would you be keen on him kind of staying at the club in that sort of back room role, maybe?
I think the job he's done, and he's earned the right to stay within the club. You know, you couldn't argue with him potentially being given the manager's job for a season. Because you know, ultimately it is mission accomplished. He did instill a degree of desire for, you know, when it was needed, and metal and steel. And all right, we've certainly you know, we continued shipping goals in every game. I think on Saturday was the 40th league match that we've conceded a goal in this season. But our shape looks a lot better. And I think, you know, we're certainly, it seems to be, to me, on the whole, to be, we're more difficult to break down. We've had some stuffings. Yes, Forest, trying to think now, was it QPR and a couple of others, Blackpool. So we're still capable of serving up absolute rubbish and being you know, Blackpool in particular was an absolute bullying from Gary Madeen. But to me, we do look more difficult to break down without being particularly more potent in attack. So we've done what we need to. And, you know, if he's not given the manager's job, then I think he's earned the right, as I say, to have a role within the coaching staff. Perhaps, you know, it's going to be very, very strange if he was offered something like the assistant manager's job, you know, but at the same time, you know, there are lots of people that don't necessarily want him as manager because they recognise and see that, yeah, he spent 8 years out of football. It's these old arguments again. He spent 8 years out of managerial, hot seat. And the managerial jobs he had before, he didn't do a particularly good job. As results, you know, the thing with football is it's very results based, and his results ultimately weren't really good enough. Wherever he was. So MK Dons fans might disagree, Macclesfield fans might disagree, but that's a very, you know, the situation that those two clubs are in is a very different kettle of fish to what Reading are in. And, you know, we need the best manager we can possibly get for next season. Somebody who is capable of firefighting while also working under restrictions and building a structure within the club and making sure that the owner knows that, make sure he knows what's needed to run a successful football club. Because at the moment, nobody's telling him that, or nobody at the moment has told him that, Paul Ince aside. And if they have told him that, then, you know, he's ignored it. So, yeah, I think it's going to be difficult. As I say, I'm not particularly in the Paul Ince camp, but at the same time, you can't deny that he's not earned a crack of the whip.
Yeah, I think the thing I'd add to that is that we have such a job on, as we're going to hear from Ian in a second, we have such a huge job on this summer to just rebuild a team, let alone rebuild a football club. And we're going to need the idea that we can just have one manager come in and just kind of magic up a football team out of thin air for a club they've not been involved in is really difficult to see. So more people involved, whether it is like a Ralph Raniak-esque consultancy role, I suppose I would be in favour of that on paper, how it works in practice. I mean, God knows what's going to happen in practice this summer. But yeah, I just feel like more helping hands at the moment who know the club and who know football certainly would be something I'm for. So let's hear from Paul Ince now, as he spoke after the West Brom game. Then we'll go to the mailbag, hear what you've been saying this week.
The objective's been achieved. And but whoever takes his job, whether it's me or someone else, there's a lot of hard work to do at this club from a recruitment point of view, you know, players out of contract. But I just want to enjoy today. I actually enjoyed the game. You know, normally I watch look at a game and I enjoyed it. You know, and I think the players enjoyed it. Just the result was disappointing for us all.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Do always get in your questions to the Tilehurst End Twitter. We always put a message out for questions before the podcast. There's also the Facebook. You can message us on that. And thetilehurstend@gmail.com to get in touch. Lord Brett Sinclair has been getting in touch with us saying, as fans, where do we go from here in regards to voicing our disillusionment with the club? Boycott season ticket purchases for 2022-2023 is one option. The club have had and continue to have an easy ride and even ignore the recent communication from Star. They treat the whole fan base with contempt. So the question here then, Hamags, I guess, is what is next for the fans? We have had the, you know, there was the protest before the Coventry game, if I'm remembering correctly. There's been obviously like various things on social media. Can think of various things on the Tilehurst End website just in and of itself. What is kind of the next thing for fans? Because we obviously now have a period of not being in the stadium, so chants and banners aren't really a thing. Going to the training ground is quite an extreme. We've seen fans do perhaps when they haven't really needed to in certain cases, and it's negligible to argue whether that's really done anything. I suppose we have you know, stayed up. So that was kind of the short-term problem. But what can fans do you think, now? Is it just a case of having to sit there and wait and see what happens with the manager and the club? And maybe if we get to, I don't know, is there a time when you think if it really looks disastrous, kind of those sort of training ground things maybe would become applicable?
I think absolutely. I think we can say that, you know, the Coventry protest worked to an extent, because it achieved the ultimate aim, which was, you know, initially to ensure that Veljko Paunović was relieved of his duties. Whether he was relieved or whether he walked, doesn't matter. Objective achieved. But the aim of those protests is also to ensure that the club instills the right structure in place, which hasn't happened. So that's the next aim. And it remains to be seen what happens in the summer. There's a lot of rebuilding, but putting that structure in place, if the club show no signs, or there is no sign of putting a structure, a good structure in place to ensure that the club remains, at least maintains its status, gives it the best chance of maintaining its status and not just constantly in relegation battles left, right and centre, I think the first day of the season, next season, if they're still in that situation, fans will have every right again to ensure that their voices are heard. You've got to remember that those protests were entirely fan-led. They weren't necessarily endorsed by Star from memory. But as we've seen, Star have recently had an open letter that, that the club so far have completely ignored. And I think if Star continue to be ignored, yes, they have the structured dialogue meetings, and it's been demonstrable that the club are either playing politics with them by giving them a load of lip service, particularly around a certain Kia Jirabjian. If the club continue to lie through their teeth or play politics with the Star, Star will also have to show some bottle and say, we're joining in on these protests, come and join us. Because they can't continue to be, you know, given short shrift by the club. Regardless on or not of how Mr. Dai wants to run the club, and it is all him now, isn't it? It's all Dai Young. It's not we hear nothing really about Dai Ju Lee. If he continues to run the club as it is, it's just going to continue to decay. Support is going to continue to hemorrhage, and the next, you know, he's going to end up having a pretty shit asset under his wing. So he's got to start listening to people. He can't continue being the dictator, you know, that he has been, because it's not working. He's been in charge of the club. He's been owner of the club for 5 years. He may well be, you know, financially benevolent towards the club out of necessity, but you know, you can continue to be as financially benevolent as you like, but it does seem to be to me that we certainly, you know, we have arguably the world's most incompetent billionaire in charge of our club at the moment, because he just refuses to listen to people. Whether that's a cultural thing, I don't know, but he's running a football club in the UK and he needs to listen about to how a football club needs to be run in this country, and not run it like maybe he has done his other businesses. People can read into that what they like. It's a real problem. It's a real problem with the way that the club is being run.
Well, that's the thing is, and you say financially benevolent. I think the EFL, who are not people that I'm particular fans of, and certainly certain Reading fans, probably myself included, would say too financially benevolent, to the point that it's landed us in trouble. And maybe we didn't need to spend X amount on certain, you know, fundings that we've put in over the last, or Dai Young has put in over the last 5 years. But, you know, that's what has happened is in the past. And I think that for me, as a fan, like the most important thing now is the day after the Luton game, what do the club come out and do? Do the club come out and say, with a big statement, and say, you know, we've hired this person as manager, or we've got this person in charge, but we've made these changes? Because if the club doesn't say anything like that, then we are just going to be in a situation with fans getting more nervous as the summer goes on. Maybe, you know, 2 weeks into the summer, we announce a new manager. Maybe 3 weeks in, we announce three signings or something like that. That's fine. But that just feels unlikely. That just doesn't feel like the real world. And what does feel like a well-run club, or at least some standard, like an averagely run club, would be that the first day after the season ends, when we've achieved our objective, we come out and either we say, Paul Ince is or isn't the manager, this person is or isn't the manager, you know, these players have rejected contracts and they're going to be moving on, these players we're still in negotiations with, and it's not asking too much for these sorts of things. I'm not really one for expecting the club to come out and say this is our, like, long-term vision for getting into the Premier League or whatever, because that's not kind of relevant at the moment for me. It's about just coming out and saying this is the summer that we're going to have.
I think fans absolutely need to see action. We've heard from the club a couple of occasions this season, in light of the points deduction, in light of the protests in the Coventry game, and the, you know, the celebration that was supposed to be. The proof is in the pudding. The proof is it will be when the club actually act and install people into specific roles, and people understand what those roles are. The fans understand what those roles are. If they continue to go down the same route and just get another manager and nothing changes, then it's going to kick off. It's absolutely going to kick off, because we're just going to end up in exactly the same situation that we have been over, in sort of seven of the last eight seasons, right, of the last nine, or however many it's been, where we're fighting relegation at the end of the season. I quite agree with what you say, is that, you know, these are the players that that will be leaving us. This is what's going to happen with regards to the manager or announce a new manager. They don't need to say a lot. They just need to come out with facts and not conjecture. This is what we want to happen, because there's no use. You know, they need to act, and they need to act quickly and get things in place if they're going to keep supporters on side. Because at the moment, the way it's going, season ticket sales are going to be heavily, heavily down next season. I can see it. And, you know, attendances are going to be even lower than they have been this season. And they've been pretty sparse at times. And we're just going to end up with playing in front of an empty stadium in front of demotivated players.
And the thing I'd add on that as well is that the club have benefited, they've definitely not benefited from COVID, but the fact that this season was our like return season did make a positive impact on ticket sales, at least for the start of the season. And then we've had things like Club 1871, which have brought fans into the ground, and those weren't club initiatives. Some of those things, certainly Club 1871 was something that fans created themselves. So the club have benefited from those things. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The season ticket sales will be a good litmus test for that, because that is where lots of clubs make their money. You know, thousands of fans paying £250 in 1 month of the summer is a lot of, you know, that's how a lot of clubs survive. So that will be a good test. I think ultimately it's just a case of what is the club doing to show that next season will be different. Obviously, they'll have to announce a manager, like that goes without saying. And yeah, beyond that, what exactly they're doing and they have done, and as you say, personnel and positions, that's what I'll be looking out for. And then after that, just to answer the question, what's next for fans? I think, you know, if it gets into, some patience will have to be required, but if it does get into, you know, the first pre-season friendly and that sort of stuff, and nothing is happening and we've got a team of 18-year-olds, then yeah, that's when you're going to see the process and stuff.
It's got massive Derby and Swindon vibes about it at the moment. A year ago, hasn't it? Who had very, very, you know, minimal squads turning up. In fact, I think Swindon, they signed Pierce Sweeney, didn't they? Phoned for him to 2 weeks later turn around and say, no, I don't want to. So let's go back to Exeter. You know, that was the right decision for him, not just because it was Swindon, but also because Exeter have just been promoted, haven't they? So.
Yeah, to be honest, the club for me, it has vibes of is Charlton, and that really worries me, because Charlton, you know, going down to League One and coming back up, and you know, Leicester, Southampton, Sheffield Wednesday may be about to do that. You know, teams survive League One and come back, sometimes stronger, that's great. A lot of teams don't. Portsmouth ain't, Charlton haven't, Bolton is another club. Like, Reading have no right to be bigger than these clubs automatically. So that's what worries me. And that is, you know, this is a crossroads that Reading are at now, whether the ownership say, yes, we've done things wrong in the past, we are going to get people in that maybe someone that Dion's never heard of, but has a good track record that you can pay money and trust to do a job to keep the football club running better than it is now. If that's what it takes, then I think we'll all agree that probably is what it takes. Let's move on to a slightly funner part of Mailbag. Sean Burgess did tweet in saying our starting 11 for next season, kind of who we would keep and who he thinks going to stay, etc. We're going to do that next week at the season review. So for now, we're going to have Matt Williams. He's tweeted us in saying, because there's literally nothing to talk about the West Brom game, how about this? As they're starting to announce players from the anniversary game, the 106 game in the summer. So that's kind of, well, that's 106 versus 2011-12, isn't it? He has two questions. Who are you most looking forward to seeing? Would any of the 11-12 team get in your combined starting 11? So the first part of that question, Bobby Convey announced today, as we record this on Monday, is a cracking addition. How Robson Kanu handbags. We must be looking forward so much to seeing how Robson Carney back at Reading.
Well, we know that he won't have seen the TTE reaction because he's blocked you, hasn't he? I mean, the thing is, he was a part of the squad in 2011-12, wasn't he? So, you know, he has every right to be there. I don't think he'll receive a particularly warm reception, particularly given his comments at the end of the 2016, or in the middle of 2016, after he'd run his contract down. Something along the lines of running my contract down at Reading was the best decision I've ever made. Cheers, Hal. Welcome back. That's an interesting one. But like I say, he was part of that 11-12 squad and has every right to be involved in the day, because he was part of the promotion. So, I mean, believe it or not, I'm not actually going to the game because my dad got me a 40th birthday present. I was 40 last week. And he got me a 40th birthday present, and before the game was announced, that just happens to be the weekend that the game is being played. So I can't go. He's got me a weekend away, as I say. But if I was going, then you know the majority of the 05-06 squad would be. I'd just love to see them all again. You know, and I'm looking forward to seeing who they announce at 1:06 every day this week, and see who is actually there. So. Great. To see Bobby Conley back. I thought he only really had one good season as a Reading player, didn't he? But I think he was very unfortunate with injury in his second season. But you know, great player in that 05, absolutely critical to the way that we played. I think Dave Kitson's obviously not coming. He's made his thoughts known, but I'd have loved to have seen him come back. I think they've announced Kevin Doyle, haven't they? Again, love to see him. You know, just give everything. So, yeah, it's very difficult to pick out any one particular favourite, but, you know, the majority of those players, I think, I'm really looking forward to seeing come back.
Are there any of the players, for the other part of the question, do you think any of the, if we were to do a combined 11, would any of the 11-12s make it in? I'm just having a flick through at the moment, and I think, I don't know whether it's controversial to say that I might have Jimmy Kebbe over Glenn Little, but that's probably just the fact that I loved watching Jimmy Kebbe. But, that's not to take anything away from Glenn Little. I guess they're just two completely different players in a sense, aren't they?
They just play 45 minutes each.
Yeah, that sounds fair, yeah.
Something at half time. That's a difficult one. Nicky Shorey over Ian Hart.
I'd have prime Ian Hart over Nicky Shorey. I'd say that's probably one that, but we didn't have prime Ian Hart, I guess, did we?
No, Gawkes and Pierce over Ingemarsson and Sonko. Not convinced. There's Sidwell Harper.
Federici over Hanneman.
No, Hanneman all day long. He was a much better keeper for me. Who else played in midfield with Jem Karachan?
Ledgerwood.
Maybe Ledgerwood along, I don't know, it's difficult, isn't it? Ledgerwood alongside Steve Sidwell, ahead of James Harper, but then James Harper played 300 games for Reading. That's a tough one.
It is tough, isn't it? Yeah, I think it'd be a very good bench, wouldn't it, having the 11-12 players. You'd have Lafondo on the bench, obviously. I mean, you probably have Kitson and Doyle up front. And maybe Jason Roberts in the 6 months that he had when we won the championship would certainly be worth a shout. But I think ultimately you're going to keep Kitson and Doyle in there, aren't you? Elisa as well. And depends what you do with Shane Long as well. So.
Alongside Kevin Doyle, I think, I don't know, Kitson's his goal scoring ratio was absolutely brilliant. The problem we had with a lot of those players in 05-06 was they were injury prone. The best players like Glenn Little and Dave Kitson didn't half suffer with injuries. You know, Kitson only played 32, 33 games in that 05-06 season. Yeah, he scored 22 goals. But you know, he was injured for over a third of the season. And the same goes for, as I say, Glenn Little. He was injured for over a third of the season. And, can you take that into consideration, or are we just talking about, you know, pure quality?
Yeah. Because,
you know, it's a difficult one. I don't really like, yeah. like these kind of questions, because I don't want to disappoint, but it's difficult to look beyond that 05-06 team.
No,
because quite frankly, it was. I don't care what anybody says. Fulham might have just stuck another 7 goals past Luton today to get over 100 goals, but they're not going to get 100 points, you know. So, because to me, Fulham, for example, are flat track bullies. They're a perfect example of that kind of thing. A bit like sort of Arsenal were in after sort of 2005-06 onwards. Really good, but when the going gets really tough, Fulham have lost like something like 10-11 games this season.
We've lost two.
We scored 99 goals. We conceded 32. It was by far, you know, the best team that has been seen in the Championship. It's difficult to look past those players, to be honest with you.
No, I know, isn't it? Yeah, that two defeats out of 46 is just madness, isn't it? And you think as well the games that we could have lost in that. I think of like Crystal Palace away when Harper scored, I think, 5 minutes from the end, and Derby away, wasn't it? And the Boxing Day, Shane Long scoring 95th minute, I think it was, to secure a 2-2 draw. We had some real tight moments in that.
Yeah, and two games that we did lose, we won the very next game. And the second, we lost to Luton and then had Preston, who were on their own 20-plus match unbeaten run. And we went and beat them. Difficult game, but we deservedly beat them. So there was a resilience about that squad. And there were times, particularly in the middle of that season, where we'd concede. And it was almost as if the players looked at each other and said, what the hell are they doing? And just went up the other end and scored straight away. You know, the Palace equaliser, James Harper, was prime case in point. So it happened on a few occasions that season. You know, the resilience, you know, the quality. And Koppel always said, I heard him say it on a number of occasions, to win games that season, we only needed to have 10 minutes of our best football. And then the game was won. And we saw that against Derby on the day that the championship was secured. So... yeah, they were a phenomenal team, absolutely phenomenal team.
Yeah, not many teams. It's quite rare you see teams score 2 in 2 minutes. I remember seeing it. Was it Hull at home scored just and then scored again? Just and that was that. It's what the best teams do, isn't it? It's actually one thing to compare to now, because obviously there will be fans listening to this who are not really, you know, weren't really there or weren't quite old enough or something for the 05-06 team. That when we conceded, and the atmosphere around the Wodeski was one of kind of like motivating the players and actually, come on, let's get on with this sort of thing, kind of as you just said. But I remember feeling it in the crowd, and I can't tell you the last time I really felt that in the crowd these days. And that's not a down on the fans so much as just you can't help your natural reaction. So these days, us conceding is a sense of, well, that's the game, which it wasn't then. It totally wasn't. And that's just one of the things that you know, it'll be great to have this day to bring back all those memories and everything. We'll hopefully be able to... do something around it as well. It'd be nice to do that. But let's go into news bites now, talk about what's been going on around the club this week.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Right, let's whip you through this then. Let's keep you up to date with the women's team and the youth teams. The women drew 0-0 with Leicester in their penultimate game of the season. So they host Man City at 12 p.m. Sunday, May the 8th. At the Select Car Leasing. That's basically, I mean, a win potentially secures a top half finish, kind of eighth at the moment. It probably would be seventh if we did win, which would be fine as a season. I think it's a really good achievement in ourselves. I suppose the disappointing thing for the women's team is that it started with a bad run, then had a middle part of the season was this amazing run, and then it's just ended now with a bad run. I think we're 10 now, winless in all competitions, so there wasn't a cup run, you know, there wasn't, obviously it was asking too much to finish top four or something like that, but there wasn't just that the couple of wins to end the season on, which would have been good. Maybe that'll come against Man City. They're fourth at the moment, I think, so that's on Sunday if you can get yourself down to that. Under 23s, their final game of the Premier League 2 Division 2 season, finished with they have a 3-1 win over Fulham and then a 2-1 defeat to Middlesbrough. Kian Levy scoring in that one. Final game of the season, 3 p.m. on Saturday, the Barks and Bucks Cup final. So if you can't get to Luton, this game is actually after the Luton game. So you can follow the Luton game, whatever. It's in Slough at Arbour Park. against Ascot United. So that's a cup final that Reading fans can get themselves down to, particularly if you weren't able to get tickets for Luton. Recommend doing that. It's only in Slough. Hopefully a nice little outing, that one. And the under-18s, they've got a couple games this week, Southampton and West Brom. Had a 5-1 defeat to Southampton last time out. And then, they're going to finish 11th in the Premier League South this year. 14-team league, so not a bad showing by any means. As you're up against the likes of Southampton stuff, who are going to vastly outspend us on their academy and everything else. So, they've shown their own. They've made their mark and stuff. It's just a case of seeing now what those teams can progress into next year, because it doesn't, just because you're bad in those divisions doesn't necessarily mean you've got bad players. We'll have to see what the club can muster in future years from the academy. Right then, let's go on to Big Match Preview, talk about the final game of Reading season.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right then, Saturday, May the 7th, 12:30 p.m. at Kenilworth Road, Luton away. It is for Reading. Not a game at the moment. We don't know what the TV fixtures are for the Championship. Kind of looking at the table, probably will be the Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest games, depending on what happens on Tuesday night between those two. But if not, this game might actually be on TV, because Luton are sick. 2-point advantage over Middlesbrough in seventh. They effectively need a win, if Middlesbrough win, to guarantee their place, although Sheffield United are there as well, which they could leapfrog with a draw, I guess. So there's a bit of a playoff picture to go with. Certainly not the, first place is sealed, relegation is sealed. Second place could be sealed by the time of the final game of the season. So this game might be on TV handbags, which would be useful given that we only had 1,000 tickets to go and get away fans there. Obviously, a lot of people missed out on that. So what are we thinking for this game then? Because typically, this applied for last weekend as well, is that we get to this game of the season and we think, let's not bother playing the people who aren't here next year. Let's, they don't matter. They're not as important. Let's take out the loan players, take out the out-of-contract players, put in some kids and we'll just have a go. And maybe those kids will have a great game. I remember we went to Derby a few years ago when they needed a win to get in the playoffs, and we beat them 3-0, and just have one of those sorts of games, just have a bit of fun. We do have to play some of those players, don't we? Because otherwise we won't have a team left. So who, if any, would you kind of consider dropping out of the team if they're on the basis that they're not really here next season?
I think it depends on what happens with Terrell Thomas, with because he went off injured. Andy Yeardom, I'm not entirely sure. He given that he's out of contract, I think he might end up not playing. I'm trying to think who else now is out of contract. We've got Scott Dan's already signed another contract, hasn't he?
He's knocking around. I mean, McIntyre and Dan are both on. Holmes is out of contract, so, and Morrison as well. But I think
if Holmes is fit, I think he needs to play, because I wouldn't play Michael Morrison. I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Morrison retired in the summer. A difficult season for him, really. Not really what I suppose what he'd want to end it on. But if he became part of the coaching staff, I wouldn't have any issues with that. Who would you play in midfield if you don't play Josh Laurent? He's got an option on his third year, hasn't he? But whether or not we're allowed to actually take that up, I'm not sure what the regulations will be with that in regards to our business plan. Rinham Hot is now out, isn't he? He's not going to be playing. Lucas Zhao has to play. He's still got another year left on his contract, doesn't he?
He's back. Looking at the bench on Saturday, I mean, Mate was on it, Kelvin Abrafer, Brandon Barker, who really wouldn't expect to be around, Dejan Tetek, I think he is contracted, then a couple other kids. I think really, in reality, I think we're just going to have to play the same team, really, aren't we? Depending on injuries and everything. I think, because if we take out, Hoylett or You could maybe take out the lone players, but then we won't have a left back. You'd play McIntyre left back, I guess, but that would just feel like a bit unnecessary considering that we then wouldn't really have a centre back. So I guess I would just have to persist with this team. And I suppose just go and tell Ince will probably just go and tell them that this is effectively a post-season friendly for us, isn't it? And Luton, it's interesting to see what happens with Luton. They just got beat 7-0 today, so they're not going to be feeling too pleased with themselves. And maybe it's going to be a case that we're just going to have to hope that they are too nervy. They've got the butterflies in their stomach and that they don't know how to finish the job. And we kind of make hay out of that. Because that's if they turn up Luton and they're fancying it and they've got the fans behind them, they have a good game, they are just going to win, aren't they? Like there's very little very unlikely we're going to turn up and kind of match them for. If they're on it, I can't imagine we'll be having much of a say anyway, will we?
No, if they're on it, then, I can see them winning quite comfortably. But as you say, it all depends on just how they respond to what's happened this evening. They're going to be a wounded animal. They need, they need to win, to be sure, don't they? Because the goal difference really comes into play now, doesn't it? Whatever happens, whatever way you look at it, it's going to be a very difficult game. But they've also had a couple of extra injuries on the back of tonight as well. So, it's going to be interesting what sort of team they put out and see whether or not we actually show any more fight and desire and sort of wherewithal than we did on Saturday. I'm not expecting it. I'm fully anticipating a fairly comfortable defeat, in all honesty. But you know, strange things have happened. I did feel the same way when we played Derby in 2015. And that was funny how that turned out.
Yeah, that's one of the games I just remember laughing at most of the goals. Looking at the teams in the playoffs, I mean, Huddersfield, probably Sheffield United, Luton, Middlesbrough and Millwall have, I guess, a chance now, don't they really? But out of those teams, I'd probably want Luton to go up, to be honest. I've no real interest in it as a neutral seeing Middlesbrough or Sheffield United or Huddersfield back in, or Bournemouth back in the Premier League, because they've been there fairly recently. But, you know, personal opinion, not really much interest in it. So Nottingham Forest would be a bit different. And Luton, quite like an underdog in that sort of sense. So I'd love to beat them. And, you know, I guess in that sense, Middlesbrough lose at Preston and it all works out fine. But yeah, I guess I probably wouldn't have quite the same schadenfreude as I did for that Derby game.
No, I think I quite agree. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal where they've come from over the last 5 to 10 years. So it would be a proper, unlike the classic press-led fairy tale of Bournemouth going up or Huddersfield or whatever, it would be a proper fairy tale after them being absolutely stitched up by the EFL back in, I think it was 2008. I wouldn't bear them any ill will if they did win. And like you say, it's just pretty boring now. The same club's going up and down. Is anybody really looking forward to Norwich coming down? Is anybody really looking forward to Watford coming down again? I mean, I can't say that I am, other than they're both decent away days, but actually going to see the clubs, knowing that they've got, 80 million quid's worth of parachute payments to give them a little bit of an extra extra sort of kick up the backside to ensure that they're successful is boring, to be honest with you.
I'm quite looking forward to Everton. I'd take Everton. I'm not so bothered for Leeds or Burnley, but Everton I'll have next season.
Yeah, I think Everton for something because it was just for the lols factor. But I think Leeds would also have an equal lols factor, given that when they went up, they were all, and their fans were, oh yeah, Leeds United, we're back. There's no way we're coming down. It would be funny if they came down again after sacking Bielsa, just for that factor, I think.
Yeah, no, I understand. I know what you mean for that one. Right, well, let's talk predictions then to round off the show. You did nice, timely appearance on the podcast after you got 1-0 defeat to West Brom. Adam and Westy also got the defeat. So the top three, to be fair, the top three is where all the action is. Westy 30, Ollie 29 points, Adam's 28. None of them on the podcast, so we'll hear how the prediction winner turns out next weekend when we have the season review. But for ourselves then, go on, Handbags, I'll give you first crack at this one.
I think a comfortable 2-0 Luton win.
Yeah, see, I don't know whether I want to throw in a risky one to get a last little cheeky bump up the table. I don't need that, but probably not even possible for me. I'm going to say a 0-0 draw, a nervy 0-0, because this is quite often what happens in these sorts of games. We know from first-hand experience how it can be a wild end to the season for the Championship, particularly if the Sky cameras are there and they're flicking between the grounds and everything. So I might go for that, and then probably end up that probably would end up with a Luton pitch invasion, wouldn't it? Which I'm not particularly looking forward to.
I'd do a pitch invasion as well, just for getting a clean sheet.
Yeah, to be fair, as I remember one of my mates when we went to Sheffield United, my mate Sean was saying if Barker scores on the pitch, which I think is a chant that maybe needs to be ignited as well. I think probably my last point on this, and you know, great to have you back on the podcast, Anthony Handbags, thanks for coming on tonight. But my final point is really that I guess in some sense of optimism, you look at Luton and see a club that hasn't had to pour in loads of money. They have just effectively been well managed and they've made it work really well. And I guess that's just for all the Championship clubs that are mired in kind of mayhem, Cardiff, Birmingham, Hull, Bristol City, with quite similar sized clubs all lodged in this kind of quagmire at the moment. Any of them can look at Luton and say, actually, in this league, you can make it work.
Absolutely. Yeah, they've got the absolute right setup. They've gone about it the right way. They've not since they were down in the National League or the Conference, and they've progressively made their way up into the Championship, and they've just, you know, consistently improved. With a little bit of a hiccup when Nathan Jones left to join Stoke, I think it was Graham Jones that was installed as their manager, but Nathan Jones came back and they've just improved. They've just consistently improved and done it the right way. No fan of them, because I think they're a very chippy club, certainly a very chippy fan base, but you can't deny that they are an exceptionally well-run club. And you know, when they eventually get their new stadium, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the same fan base that I know, a couple of Luton fans, one of which is from Yorkshire, so probably not very representative of the overall Luton fan base. That draws an end this episode. We will be back for the last episode of the season in a week's time, a season review. We're hoping to do that in person, get a few of us down to a place where we can have a nice long chat and a nice therapeutic chat about how the season's gone and what comes next. We've got Luton, and then who knows what will happen immediately after Luton. It might be absolutely nothing is what the club comes out with after that. We'll be keeping an eye on the Tyler Stend social media, and of course the website as well for all the analysis from that game. We'll be back to review the season in a week's time, when at the very least we'll be reviewing a season in which Reading stayed in the Championship. Come on, you arse.
You smile. Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's